each other. Teach somebody to learn. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prasaya Mukhaya, Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namaha. Namaste, Saraswati Devi, Hanumani Pichayana, Yehi Sesha Sinivari Bhastya Pidan Sitaire, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Bhagavati Ananda, Sri Advaita Daha, Sivasari Gaura Bhaktavinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So last night we began seminar on the Nectar of Instructions, verses number 2 and 3. And there are 6 items in each verse, and we'll begin by reading the verse from Ekadashamrita. Atyahara prayasascha prajapaniyamagraha janasangaschalayamcha sarvirbhaktivinashiti. So one's devotional service is spoiled when one becomes too entangled in the following 6 activities. 1. Eating more than necessary or collecting more funds than required. 2. Over-endeavoring for mundane things that are very difficult to obtain. 3. Talking unnecessarily about mundane subject matters. 4. Practicing the scriptural rules and regulations only for the sake of following them and not for the sake of spiritual advancement, or rejecting the rules and regulations of the scriptures and working independently or whimsically. 5. Associating with worldly minded persons who are not interested in Krishna consciousness. And 6. Being greedy for mundane achievements. So last night we discussed 1, 2, and 3. That is Atyahara, Prayasa, and Prajapa. And I was thinking we could start off the class by asking if there was any questions concerning last night's material, because really we didn't have time for questions so much. Anyone? We can take 5-10 minutes if there's any questions on what was spoken last night, and if not, we can go into tonight's material. Okay, so the next one is Niyamagraha. Now, Niyamagraha means too much attachment or too much neglect of rules and regulations. So the word niyamagraha and niyamagraha, it's pronounced niyamagraha and niyamagraha. Too much attachment, too much neglect. So too much attachment, it has 2 meanings. So niyamas, or rules, are 2 kinds. So the word niyamas means the rules. And there are what is called vidhis. Vidhis means prescriptions, or things to do. And then there is nishedhas. Nishedhas means prohibitions, or things one should avoid. So you'll find that That is a very intricate part of the executed devotional service, doing what is recommended, avoiding what is not recommended. Or to put it more clearly, to avoid things, to do things that are favorable and to avoid things unfavorable. One follows the rules and regulations according to one's position. One is eligible to take the next step. If one does not follow the rules and regulations according to one's position, or one is unable, then he is unable to take the next step. He falls down from his situation. So Krishna tells Uddhava in verses 6, 7, and 6 and 7 in the 11th canto, chapter 21. He says, "My dear Uddhava, although all material bodies are composed of the same five elements and are thus equal, the Vedic literatures conceive of different names and forms in relationship to such bodies so that the living entities may achieve their goal." And the next verse is, I'll explain that. "O saintly Uddhava, in order to restrict materialistic activities, I have established that which is proper and improper amongst all material things, including time, space, and physical objects." So people are different according to their, what we say, karma. And therefore, there are rules and regulations for people on different platforms. Uddhava says, or Krishna says, steadiness in one's own position is declared to be actual piety, whereas deviation is considered impiety. "In order to restrict materialistic activities, I have established that which is proper and improper amongst all material things, including time, space, and physical objects." So there are two sets of rules and regulations. One is rules and regulations that pertain to our conditioned nature, and rules and regulations that pertain to our constitutional nature. Constitutional nature is quite easy to understand. That is, we are living entities, parts and parcels of Krishna, and our spirit souls. So there are rules and regulations for executing the spiritual performances. And there are rules and regulations according to one's material situation. Spiritual rules and regulations correlate or parallel the material situations, so people can gradually move forward. Which really means that there are rules and regulations for renunciates, and there's rules and regulations for grihasthas, and they're different. And there's rules and regulations for people who are situated in karma yoga, those situated in jnana yoga, and those who are situated in bhakti. So he describes that there are three categories: karma, jnana, and bhakti. In bhakti, indifference, performance of favorable activities, renunciation, detachment, and discussion of shastras are all favorable. So what does that mean? Indifference means one should be indifferent to things that have no relationship to one's spiritual advancement. Performance of favorable activities, as Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita, in the, I believe it's the third chapter, and that one must follow their prescribed duties if someone follows someone's other's path. It's better destruction in the course of one's own duties than to follow another's path. To follow another's path is dangerous. So, you know, prescribed rules and regulations are given according to one's particular situation. And as the spiritual master will make that, you know, distinction. Opposed to the principles of favor, in other words, the nishesh, the dues we just mentioned, opposed our attachment to sense enjoyment, or anything that is opposed to the conclusion of devotional service. So that is, we're getting into generalities now. So what is opposed and what is favorable for one's devotional service. So that, in other words, if a spiritual master gives an instruction to engage a devotee in one particular type of activity, and another devotee thinks, well, I would also like to do that activity, he may not be able to make advancement. Because maybe from his conditional point of view, in order to get free from his attachment, he has to have a service which is conducive to elevating his consciousness. Otherwise, he may see the activity in a very material way. So that is the more or less the concern of the spiritual master, how to engage the devotee in a favorable activity. This is a very deep subject, this, because it goes into the intricacies of one's spiritual and material situation and correlates the activities accordingly. So I'm just giving some general principles. When one gives up his illicit activities and low-class character, he attains the level of karma. So when one, in other words, when one comes out of the material world, he's engaged in karma bhakti, karma yoga. So there's a difference between karma yoga and bhakti yoga. What's the difference between karma yoga and bhakti yoga? They look the same. The difference is that when one does the activity because they like to do it, that's karma. And if one does the activity for Krishna, that's bhakti. So you may like to do something, but Krishna may not want you to do something that. But you want to do it anyway. So Krishna says, okay, that's nice. And you can just offer the results to me. So in order to engage that living entity in service, Krishna accepts your activity, although you do it because this is your preferred way of serving. I want to serve like this. So in one sense, that is karma. Well, one bhakti actually means activities that are desired by Krishna for Krishna. And for the pleasure of Krishna, in relationship to Krishna. So there's a difference. So that's only sometimes we speak of anashram, and that is karma yoga. When one develops detachment in karma yoga, then one can come to the stage of jnana yoga. He becomes fixed in knowledge and attains a taste for devotional service. And as soon as the qualification of devotional service manifests, he gives up Gyanaka Yoga. Otherwise, he is just performing the activities for the sake of the activities and not for spiritual advancement. When one comes to the stage of Gyan, in other words, performing activities based on the principles of philosophical knowledge, which the stage of material life comes to Karma Yoga, from Karma Yoga, Gyan Yoga, and if one is on the Gyan platform, and then if one refuses to go to the Bhakti platform, then he is guilty of the Niyamaka. Now, performing the activities without the elevation. Just performing the activities for the sake of the activities, without spiritual advancement. What is the qualification for coming to the platform of bhakti? And this is explained in the 11th canto, 20th chapter, verse number 31. Let me see if I can find that verse. Therefore, for devotee engaged in my loving service, with mind fixed on me, the cultivation of knowledge and renunciation is generally not the means of achieving the highest perfection in this world. So cultivation of knowledge and renunciation of materialistic activities allow one to get a foothold in devotional service. But ultimately they must be given up. One must, on the platform of bhakti, the only qualification is faith. Strata. No, strata means faith, but it also means firm faith. You follow? It's a little bit difficult to follow, but you can understand. Sometimes we think I'm coming into Krishna conscious, I'm doing bhakti. You're not doing bhakti. Don't think you're doing bhakti. Bhakti is pure. Bhakti is free from any personal motivation. Bhakti yoga is abhivasita sunya jnana kamana angatamana kulena krishnasi. Bhakti has to be free from any personal motivation or any desire for philosophical gain based on, just religious scriptures. So you may think you're doing bhakti, but you're not. Sorry. You're striving to come to bhakti. Therefore, Krishna, through the spiritual master, is gradually bringing that living entity according to his faith, according to his surrender to more and more. That's why he'll give different instructions to different devotees according to their position. This is what the spiritual master is meant to do. To be able to see where the devotee is at, the aspiring devotee is at, and engage him accordingly so he can make advancement. If a person is very fruitive, and then we give him a service which is very fruitive, and he may never give up that fruitive mentality. For instance, a person is very much attached to the results of their activities, so you give him a job as fundraising. So, and then he remains attached to the idea that he's the doer. Sometimes we say that's dovetailing. It can be dovetailing, but unless a person is able to understand the principles of bhakti, sometimes by performing activities that are the source of their attachments, then they remain attached. They become more fruitful. And there's many examples. Because a person has a certain inclination, sometimes they're engaged in that way, but that may not be the best way for them to make spiritual advancement. Because it just enhances their materialistic conceptions. So Krishna says, therefore, for a devotee engaged in my loving service, with mind fixed on me, the cultivation of knowledge and renunciation is generally not the means of achieving the highest perfection within this world. By giving up karma and jnana in their various stages, one becomes eligible for bhakti. So, again, what are some of the verses for karma and jnana? What is it? Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, yad karosi yad nasi yad chahosi dadasi yad yad tapasi tukote yad takurusha vanakana. All that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer, give away, all that you activities you do should be done as an offering to me. So that is actually jnana yoga. A combination of karma and jnana. Because all that you do, not that all that I want you to do. Therefore, ultimate bhakti really starts from the verse and Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, offer your homage to me, serving you from me. So bhakti really is, and then the last verse, abandon all varieties of religion. Abandoning all your other attempts to make elevation and simply surrender. Then when you surrender, you're beginning the process of bhakti. Until there's surrender, really there's no real bhakti doesn't begin to develop. Faith doesn't begin to develop. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, faith is the only rule for people established on the level of bhakti. That is the only rule for those who engage in bhakti yoga, to have faith. And for those who are not up to the platform of bhakti, they must follow various rules and regulations which help them develop faith. Otherwise, their faith will not, what we say, all of a sudden manifest. Faith continues to elevate the person through the different stages of bhakti as one engages in devotional service. So there are 9 stages of devotional service. I'm sure you remember those. Rupa Goswami's verse from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the 9 stages. The first one is association with devotees. Tada Ashrada, Tato Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, Anatta Nivritti, Nishta, Ruchi, Ashakti, Bhava, and Prema. So Straha, or faith, is through the olos. Faith is the means from going from one stage to another. So through association comes the desire to engage, and through the desire to engage, when one becomes initiated, and then one's spiritual practice starts to develop, and then through it, after that, then what do we call them? The anarthas start to go. Because without getting rid of the anarthas, one cannot make progress, one cannot become steady. As long as one has material desires or attachments, we call these anarthas, it's impossible to remain steady on the path of bhakti. So one has to gradually, following the rules and regulations, be free from these attachments and aversions. Krishna explains that in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, second chapter, 245, I think. And then Krishna says to Arjuna, 245. Yeah. I remember the Yavida, this tribune of Arjuna, near Dwanda Rajasakvasa. Near yoga, shema, atmavan. The Vedas mainly deal with the 3 modes of material nature. Rise above these modes, Arjuna. Be free from all attachment and aversion, and be situated in transcendence. So, he says, be free from all attachment and aversion. So bhakti really means to be free from attachment and aversion. But there is attachment in bhakti. Attachment to what is positive and rejection of what is negative. And the positive and negative means what is favorable and what is unfavorable. So again, the nine stages are important. Those who do, let's see. Okay, so this is important. Now the nine stages in sadhana bhakti, there are four stages in sadhana bhakti. That is straddha, nishtha, ruchi, and ashakti. So, of course, that's already assumed. Yeah. These in sadhana bhakti already. Well, of course, we're going beyond the stage of bhajana kriya, because in order to engage in sadhana bhakti, one has to have a spiritual master. So bhajana kriya means to accept a spiritual master. So from accepting a spiritual master, then one executes the process. And then in Archidavritti. And on the stages of an Archidavritti, there is faith, steadiness, taste, and attachment. So according to different degrees of faith, each level has different rules like that. Each level has different rules. Give you an example of a person on the stage of Ruchi. There are two types of devotees who are on the stage of Ruchi. There are the devotees who, Ruchi means taste or sweetness. So in the devotional performances such as kirtan or bhajan, there is one type of devotee who is attached to, it's called excellence of elements, and there's a devotee who is not attached to excellence of elements. Yes? What is excellence of elements? On the platform of Ruchi, there's two categories of Ruchi. Those who are attached to excellence of elements, and those who are not attached to excellence of elements. Excellence of elements means that if someone's leading kirtan, even if they can't sing and they can't play the instruments nice, still the person will find sweetness in that. They'll enjoy any kirtan because it's glorification of the Lord. They have the taste for glorification. And then there's those who are attached to the kirtan being nice. And, you know, excellent. In other words, musical composition and my voice is being synchronized. Otherwise, they can't get that sweetness, that taste. They have to have that. So, of course, the one who's free from the excellence of elements, they're higher. Like that. Of course, when we do kirtan, we try to make excellence of elements, because that's Prabhupada's instructions, especially in the West, because it's a good way to preach. People are attracted to nice kirtans, nice musical compositions. When you go to India, sometimes you go to the kirtans in Mayapur Dham, Gaur Aarti, and just smashing the kartals and slamming the drums and, you know, dancing like wild men. But it's bhakti. Can't say it's not bhakti. You know, the excellence of elements is not there, but it's still bhakti. And one who's got the taste for bhakti, they don't care. It's just sad. So, but of course, you know, it depends on your, you know. Bhakti Siddhanta was not so strict. Bhakti Bhachila Prabhupada was. Bhakti Siddhanta didn't really concern himself so much with excellence of elements. Prabhupada did, because he was preaching in the West. The Westerners, they have to have that. we try to make everything as nice as possible for Krishna. But one who's got the taste for Krishna consciousness, if it's a kirtan, they don't care what it sounds like. It's a kirtan, it's glorification of Krishna. They're happy, it's sweet. Yeah, I mean, that's the stage of Ruchi. And then, of course, I guess we mentioned that there's different rules and regulations on each stage. Those who do not give up the rules of the previous level are bound to the rules like chains that do not allow them to proceed to the next level. So there's rules for Nishta, there's rules for Ruchi, there's rules for Ashakti. So one who's on the Ashakti platform, one who's on the Ruchi platform cannot follow the rules of one who's on the Ashakti platform. So it's different. In devotional service, whatever rules are prescribed for each level are all subordinate to the one rule, and that is always remember Krishna. So we have to remember that. The rules and regulations of each level are always subordinate to the one rule. To always remember Krishna. To never forget Krishna. All other prohibitions mentioned arise from the main prohibition. And this is called Niyamagraha. And that one follows the rules and regulations for the sake of making spiritual advancement. And one does not reject rules and regulations and act independently. If one does, that's a fall down. The behavior exhibited by the renunciants is proper behavior in this connection. That is, following rules and regulations in order to perfect their position. There are rules and regulations for household and renunciants, and Hari Bhakti Vilas mentions only those for the householders. So, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Sanatana Goswami, you write a book of rules and regulations, and they're mainly for Grihasthas. That's the Hari Bhakti Vilas. There are some rules and regulations for sannyasis in there, but most of the ones, for instance, sannyasis are in other places. Again, an example. I got here Shiva Chaturdasi, right? That's the most important. I can't remember. See my well, of course, in the 11th, all of these statements that support these principles are all coming from the 11th canto, Krishna speaking to Uddhava. So one has to be careful not to imitate someone else and understand how best to become a Krishna conscious if they imitate someone else. So here's a verse, Krishna says, material piety and sin, which arise from the good and evil of this world, cannot exist within my unalloyed devotees, who, being free from material hankerings, maintain steady spiritual consciousness in all circumstances. Indeed, such devotees have achieved me, the Supreme Lord, will be on anything that can be conceived by material intelligence. So again, Krishna says, one who is engaged in my devotional service fully, they're rightly situated. Even if they commit some abominable activities, are considered to be saintly. Why? Because they're rightly situated. When one becomes a pure devotee of the Lord, then devotion is spontaneously established within the heart, and where then is a need to observe rituals that simply obstruct one's devotional service. So ultimately, one has to follow the rules and regulations, but if the rules and regulations actually become obstacles to bhakti, then one doesn't have to follow. Sometimes we see, advanced devotees will do do things and people will imitate. But that's, you can, if you try to imitate, sometimes you fall down because, you know, they're on the platform of prema or bhakti, and you're not. So you're thinking that simply by imitating, you can, you know, you're actually doing the right thing. So one has to be careful. Eighth verse in the Nectar of Instructions nicely explains that one who has awakened a taste for hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord need not follow other rules and regulations. One may follow rules and regulations on a lower level out of one's own sweet will or to teach, but one must not be attached to rules and regulations on the lower level. As an example, of course, devotees were bewildered. One time Prabhupada went to a preaching program. And this was some potential, or we say prospect, for becoming a life member. So the man had prepared prasadam for all the devotees of Prabhupada. So they were distributing the prasadam, and there were onion pakoras. The devotees went, said to Prabhupada, this is onions. Onions. I realize you don't know what they are, but so the devotees were telling Prabhupada, these are onions. Prabhupada said, be quiet. He didn't want the man to become disturbed and that way be offended that his prasadam was not. So that was one case like that. So for Prabhupada, in other words, he nullified any reactions that we would have gotten for eating the onion pakoras. But if someone else, if we would have thought that way independently without the instruction of the spiritual master, then we would have got a reaction. So the spiritual master can transcend the rules and, or reject the rules and regulations in order for a higher principle to come in. Bhakti. Sometimes another example is, you know, guests are coming into the temple and there's no prasadam. So we have to get some prasadam out there so the guests can have some. So the person he's chanting all the long prayers and bowing down, making a big long, you know, everyone's waiting. It's so better to just, you know, sometimes do the expedient, you know, say a few quick prayers and get the prasadam out there so people can get something. So, you know, there are considerations where one has to suspend the rules and regulations on one level to support a rule and a regulation on a higher level. So that comes with some kind of, you know, experience. But generally, we don't do that unless we actually understand clearly. So a lot of times people will say, Prabhupada, oh, Prabhupada drank 7-Up. So we can all drink 7-Up. So when Prabhupada drank 7-Up one time, now 7-Up has become, you know, something that I'm going to drink. It's a bona fide drink. Prabhupada took it one time. Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola, which has caffeine in it. There's one tape Prabhupada's asking about Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola is 50 cents, Prabhupada?
Yes.
Big glass you get for 50 cents.
Oh, Prabhupada, very nice.
But Coca-Cola has caffeine in it. But, you know, so we have to be careful not to try to jump. Generally, see, as it says here, a pure devotee of the Lord doesn't have to follow any rules and regulations, but he does to teach others. or something like that. Keeping the instructions in mind, one should always engage in hearing and chanting and remembering Krishna. So one has to keep these instructions. Okay, so that's Niyamagraha, and there's most of the verses are in the 11th canto, 20th chapter, and there's a few other verses. But study the nine processes of the devotional service, the nine stages, and as one makes advancement, see where you are. What stage are you on? Are you on Shraddha? Are you on Bhajana Kriya? Are you on Nishtha? Nishtha means the steady platform. Are you on the Ashakti platform, the attached to Krishna? Are you on the Bhava platform, affection for Krishna? So you have to see. And the best book for that to understand that is read Madhurya Kandambini by Bhakti Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He explains the different stages of bhakti very carefully. So bhakti, although it's very simple, it's also a very intricate science. And really bhakti means pure devotion. That bhakti must be free from fruitive activities, gained from fruitive activities or philosophical speculation, must be in relationship to Krishna, and must be to please Krishna. Now demons also please Krishna. Demons please Krishna, but they don't get bhakti, they get liberation, because Krishna kills them. So how do the demons please Krishna? Because Krishna likes to fight. So he can't fight with the devotees, so he needs somebody to fight with. Prabhupada said Krishna likes to flex his muscles, work out a little bit, so it's a little exercise. So he comes to the material world and fights with a few demons. Therefore Krishna enjoys that, and the demons get liberation, Krishna is happy because he gets to fight. So you wonder where you get your propensity to fight, it's from Krishna. We are the microcosms of Krishna, because Krishna has all the characteristics, and characteristics and qualities we have are just little fractions of Krishna's reservoir of qualities. So the demons also please Krishna, but it's not bhakti, because their desire is not to please Krishna. If they were desiring to please Krishna, then it would be bhakti, but they don't desire to please Krishna. But still they please Krishna because Krishna likes to fight. So therefore their intentions are not right, but still the activity is right. So they get the benefit of the activity and not the intentions. So you follow? Yeah. If your intention is to please Krishna, that's bhakti. But if you somehow please Krishna without the intention of pleasing Krishna, that is not pure bhakti. What's an example? There's another example. Yeah, Shishupa. Good example, one demon. Or there was one story where one ghee lamp was lit and some mouse came onto the altar and his tail got caught on fire. So his tail was on fire and he was waving his tail around, so he was like doing Archie with his tail. That wasn't his intention. So the story explained that he died, but he had liberation because he offered Arjuna. But he wasn't intending to offer Arjuna. His tail just happened to get caught on fire. So he can accidentally please Krishna and get the benefit of being liberated. But when you try to please Krishna, you do please Krishna, that's fine. Okay, so these are the rules and regulations for grihasthas are in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, and you can study those very carefully. Okay, we'll go on to the next one, Jana Sangha. Or should we ask questions at the end of each one? Want to do that? Okay, yeah, in the back.
Yeah, you said that actually the difference between a pure devotee and a non-pure devotee, you can say, that the devotee has the intention. Not the activity, but the intention of...
That's a pure activity, not pure devotee. So, a pure devotee is always is like that. A person may perform a pure activity, but if he's not... I'm sorry.
Yeah.
What's that? Go ahead.
I guess okay. Se appunto il puro devoto ha anche l'intenzione di servire oltre che a fare l'attività, però poi volevo così concludere la domanda. I want to complete my question.
Yeah.
For example, you gave the before the little anecdote about the mouse, no?
Yeah.
But it seems that when one is involved in this kind of activity, there is some punya. Some bias activities in the past.
Yeah.
For example, you mentioned also the limo. If you can speak something about
this
one. When one finds involved in an activity, it brings a great spiritual credit, no?
Mm-hmm.
That it means that there is in the past some bhakti performed.
Generally, yes. Yes, there's some bhakti performed in the past, but not necessarily, because there's that one discussion between Prabhupada. Next thing is the Mal Krishna Goswami mentioned. So she said to Prabhupada, how is it possible, Prabhupada, that we're able to perform bhakti, where in the past we really can see we have no pious credits? And Prabhupada said, well, I have created your pious credits. In other words, many times the spiritual master will say to the Lord, please accept this devotee, even though he's very sinful and unqualified. And Krishna has to accept. So therefore, really the process is a process of mercy. But generally, if we speak about it, yes, what you say is correct. That previous pious and devotional activities makes one eligible to engage in devotional service. We have the example of Valmiki Muni. Valmiki Muni was a hunter. He actually was a murderer. But somehow he met Narada Muni. And Narada Muni, you know, started to preach to him, and he gave up his, you know, his dacoit activities, and then he wanted to engage in devotion to Ram. So Narada said, okay, you chant the name of Ram. So he tried to chant Ram's name, but he couldn't because he was so sinful. The name of Ram would not manifest on his tongue. So he was trying to chant Ram, and he couldn't. So Narada, being very kind and merciful, said, all right, you chant the name of the Lord of Death, which is Mara. Mara means death. So he was chanting Mara, 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 Mara. After chanting Mara for a long time, M-A-R-A, R-A-M-A, if you just keep crunching it together, then it becomes like Ram. So that's what happened. Finally, he was able to come to the platform of chanting Ram's name. And then he became purified. He not only so purified, he became qualified to write down the pastimes of Ram. So it was simply by the mercy of Narada. That was his only qualification. Otherwise, he wasn't able to do anything. Couldn't even chant. So really, if you think about it, what is our qualification for devotional service? Really, it's the mercy of the spiritual master. Yeah. Yes, Anubhava.
A question?
Yeah.
You touch a very, for me, very interesting point in about engaging and being engaged in one's service according to our propensities. But maybe sometimes it could be that this engagement is not really what we need in order to improve, in order to grow. But we call it dovetailing. And what is the border, the limit? When is dovetailing and when is not? I mean, especially in the temples, very often it happens that people who are very, who have very passionate inclinations, they are put in responsibility in service because this, this passion
is aggressive. They're aggressive, so they get good positions.
They become, somehow they become aggressive, they can become proud.
Yeah, so that's, again, that's the responsibility of the spiritual master to engage his disciple according to how best they can make advancement. I mean, you know, therefore sometimes a spiritual master, and that's quite happens a lot, will take one disciple and take them out of one service and put them in another service. Or take them out of one temple and put them in another temple. Engage them differently. And in one place they're not making advancement, in another place all of a sudden they make a very nice advancement. So that's the responsibility of the spiritual master, to see that his disciple is making nice advancement. That's his responsibility. And in other cases, we find sometimes a person is just giving a service to dovetail their propensities. But one has to go beyond the stage of dovetailing after a while.
After a while?
Yeah. Dovetailing means that you like to do something, so you do it for Krishna. But after a while, one bhakti really means to do whatever Krishna wants you to do, not just what you like to do. Yes, Mother Krishna Loka.
Well, you say if the spiritual master's responsibility is to see to the disciple is good in the devotional service. But sometimes the spiritual master is far away. How can we see so far away after the disciple in the devotional service?
Yeah.
The
that's quite common. Well, therefore, what we have now is that there's a system of monitoring where the disciple will work under the temple authority, and the temple authority usually gives reports to the guru, and guru inquires from the temple authorities how his disciple is doing, how they're making progress like that. Guru's business is not to sit on the GPC. Not their main business. The guru's business is to take care of the disciples. That's number one. I'm not criticizing that. I'm saying that they can do both. But their first responsibility is to their disciples. Otherwise, what's the point of that being a guru? If you can't, since one should not become guru, they can't deliver their disciples from the cycle of birth and death. So even in the case if a spark of a disciple falls down, a guru will try to go come and bring him back. Says he grabs him by the hair and drags him back. Drags him by the sikha. The guru is so concerned with his disciple that if the disciple goes away, he personally goes to get him and brings him back. So with a worldwide movement as we have, there is a more complex system of monitoring the disciples' progress, and that's through the temple presidents and through the maybe through the Ashiksha Guru, who was taking care of that person for him also. He's receiving knowledge from the Siksha. Okay. That is something that has been put in place due to the nature of our society. Previous, if you study the history of Vaishnavism, everything was localized. The guru was there, the disciples were there, and everyone was in the same, you know, geographical proximity. But now you don't have that. You have a worldly complex. So the system is a little bit more developed in order to allow for disciple and the guru to keep communications. But both have to make an effort now also to keep connection. Sometimes people come up to me and ask me questions about their spiritual life. My first question to them is, well, what does your spiritual master tell you? Not what am I going to tell you, but what did he tell you? And then I'll tell you something after you tell me what he tells you. Yeah, so like that. Okay. Yes, Mother Chitramupini. Through all the stages.
Yes, we see that until faith is not completely purified, and purified goodness, the faith is subjected to contamination by any of the remotes of material nature.
Yeah. So therefore we have Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. Your faith is confirmed, your faith is coming from three sources, not just one. It's called the triangle of truth. So there are 10 principles of bhakti. And one should know those 10 principles because each of them has philosophical terms connected with them. I don't have a list of the 10 principles, but those 10 principles are the foundation of all philosophical knowledge. Bhaktivinoda Thakura's book, So the 10 principles. Ultimately, the ultimate principle is Asraya, and Krishna is the complete shelter. The other 9 principles lead up to that one principle, or support that one principle. be a little intelligent. Material energy is quite complex. Unless you're clear about, you know, how to execute devotional service, you become bewildered by the material energy. Any other questions? Okay, I'll go on to the next one. I think you'll find this one really interesting. This is called Jana Sangha. This is association with worldly minded persons. So this has to be rejected. And there are actually seven categories of worldly persons, and we'll speak about each category. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he's a spiritual scientist. He takes the principle and breaks it into its, you know, finer terms. Sajjano Sangha is Bhakti Rasamati Sindhu, Sano Sangha, Sabhatravare. Devotees should associate with devotees who are more advanced. That is the number one principle. One should seek out advanced association. By associating with devotees, everything is achieved. Everything is achieved. Prabhupada said, three things are important in devotional service: association, association, association. If you can remember those three things, you'll have a yeah. We chant in association, we take prasadam in association, we serve in association, we do things in association. And therefore, we become happy in our Krishna consciousness. O Partha, those who claim to be my devotees are actually not my devotees, but those who are the devotees of my devotees are actually my devotees. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj would ask, are you a devotee of Krishna? And they would say, yes. And he would say, I'm sorry, I have no time to talk to you. And if they would say, no, I'm a devotee of Krishna's devotee, he would say, please come in. So he was very concerned that people understand what is the right principle. A verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 7.5.32, unless they smear upon their bodies the dust of the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, completely freed from material contaminations, persons very much inclined to materialistic life cannot be attached to the lotus feet of the Lord, who is glorified for his uncommon activities. So that is Prahlad Maharaj. So smearing the dust of the lotus feet of a Vaishnava on one's body means to become, to take his association and hear from him. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu says, one who desires to attain devotion to Krishna should carefully give up the association of worldly people. That means the devotee should not engage in activities in verse number 4. So here's the principle. So there are six activities mentioned in verse 4 of Nectar of Instructions, and that is speaking confidentially, hearing one's confidential thoughts, giving gifts and receiving gifts, giving prasadam and receiving prasadam. These six exchanges of love must be done amongst devotees. If they're done amongst non-devotees, that is association with non-devotees. Activities like talking with worldly people in the course of one's work is not considered, you know, association with non-devotees. When the same activities are done with affection for that person, then that is considered to be association. So, simple, if you have a job, if you're talking to your fellow employees or your boss, that's not association with non-devotees. But if you develop an affection, and based on that affection you develop a relationship, then that becomes jhana sangha. Okay, is that correct? quit your job. I did. I quit about 30 years ago. Okay, said there are 7 categories of worldly people. So I'll mention the 7 categories. The first one is Mayavadis or atheists. The second is sense enjoyers. The third is those who are fond of sense enjoyers. And then in that category, those who are attached to sense enjoyment and those who are attached to sense enjoyers. The next one is women, and that is, women, Prabhupada says, for men, woman is woman, and for woman, man is woman. So the term woman applies to the opposite sex, and not to a particular gender. So try to understand that, don't get confused. Is that clear? For woman, the word woman applies, means the opposite sex. And then there's 2 categories, A and B, opposite sex, and acceptable in marriage according to regulation. And those who are womanizers, we'll explain who they are. And then that's number 5. And then Dharmadwajis, that's the hypocrites or fools. Those who are hypocritical and fools. And the last one is the ill-behaved, and those who are foolish outcasts or attached to sinful activities. So these are the 7 categories of Dhyanasangha, non-devotees. So we'll speak a little bit about each. This is really a long part of the... You have another 2 hours. I'm guilty of... Mayavadis or atheists are offenders to Krishna, 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 Mayavadi, Krishna, Aparadi. They do not accept the eternal name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Supreme Lord. For them, everything is Maya, the living entity is Maya, devotional service, and all temporary. Through their association, one's devotion gradually disappears. And then the story of the great Acharya, how he heard from Mayavadis in order to get Lord Chaitanya angry at him. Lord Chaitanya would never get angry at Advaita Acharya. He was always respecting him as someone, as senior. Advaita Acharya never liked Lord Chaitanya giving him respect. He wanted to be subordinate to Lord Chaitanya, but Lord Chaitanya followed the etiquette of respecting seniors. So Advaita Acharya found one thing that would agitate Lord Chaitanya, and he started hearing from Mayavadis. So Lord Chaitanya found out, it's a wonderful story, where he comes to Advaita's house, and in a very angry way, jumps on Advaita and starts beating him, and beating him, and beating him. And Advaita Acharya is in ecstasy, saying, now he's accepted me as his son. It's a beautiful story, and it's really quite long. And of course, Nityananda was laughing. Haridas Thakur was in fear, and Sita Thakurani was saying, stop, don't beat him, he's an old man.
She
will die. It appeared just to confirm the story. So that's a wonderful story. So nothing becomes more. Nothing gets the wrath of the Lord faster than associating or hearing from atheists or Mayavadis. And Mayavadis are atheists. They have a nice philosophy. It sounds spiritual, but Mayavadis are atheists. Buddhists are also atheists. Mayavadis are atheists. Because no one, one who doesn't accept the Supreme Personality of God is an atheist. Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead means devotional service. And one who doesn't accept the Supreme Lord, there's no service. Therefore, ultimately, they are atheists. So one should avoid their association very, very carefully. The second one is sense enjoyers. Quarrel and argument and hankering for sense enjoyment is their life. Filled with envy, blasphemy, and violence. Raghunath Das Goswami states, when one eats food offered by a materialistic person, one mind becomes contaminated and is unable to think of Krishna. And that's a very important point. Sometimes we accept dinner invitations from people who are sense enjoyers. They're not following the rules and regulations. They're not chanting. And then if you eat that food, your mind becomes contaminated and you can't think of Krishna. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has very carefully emphasized that principle. And Prabhupada gives a few purports in Chaitanya Charitamrita. One should not eat food prepared by non-devotees. And if you're wondering why you're having problems with devotional service, if you're doing that, as soon as you stop that, your mind will start clearing up. Because that is a very big point. It's hard to chant and it's hard to think of Krishna if you're eating food offered by the non-devotees. And so therefore, if you have to eat food outside, eat food that is not cooked, such as fruits and maybe raw vegetables. But if you are in needing of cooked food, then you must make arrangements otherwise. Especially sometimes we eat karmi bread. Karmi bread is full of karma. Sometimes I find myself, you know, in that situation unknowingly, and then I'll have dreams about, you know, wars and watching them like watching television or something. You get the craziest dreams sometimes. Because it's like that. That subtle energy is transferred into your consciousness, goes into the food, and then pretty soon you're in the movies. Television. So be careful. Sometimes it's hard to avoid that, but if one is serious about Krishna consciousness, one has to avoid that. Okay, so sense enjoyers, one should avoid sense enjoyers. And then the next one is those who are also sense enjoyers because they are fond of sense enjoyers. And they always think of sense enjoyment within their hearts. Some people are not sense enjoyment, but take pleasure in associating with sense enjoyers. They soon become sense enjoyers through the bad association. So there's two types of sense enjoyers. Those who are extremely attached to sense enjoyment and devotees who are attached to sense enjoyment. In the category of devotees, there are two types. So even there's devotees who are attached to sense enjoyment. One, those who have included the Lord as part of their sense enjoyment, and those who have kept the Lord in the center of their sense enjoyment. I mentioned this last night. This is interesting. That there's people who are sense enjoyers, they make Krishna the exclusive focus of their sense enjoyment, and then there's others who have sense enjoyment, but Krishna is just one of many categories. Association with the latter is preferred to association with the former. So don't associate with people who are sense enjoyers. Sometimes we have to associate with people who are sense enjoyment, who see Krishna as their sense enjoyment. But ultimately Krishna's no one's order supplier. So ultimately a devotee has to give that up. Dress does not make a devotee, therefore one should seek out genuine devotees. We have the example of Pundarik Vidyanidhi, he, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent Mukunda to go to Gadadha to go meet Puni with Vijayanidhi, Mukunda went with Gadadha to accompany him. When he met Puni with Vijayanidhi, he saw Pundarik. Pundarik was dressed in very fine, costly garments, silk dhoti. His hair was slicked down. He had all kinds of perfumes. He was living in a very opulent room with very costly pillows and bedsteads and servants and rugs and draperies and decorations. And he looked like a worldly sense jaya. And when Gadadha was there, he was thinking, this person is a great devotee. And so he was having doubts. So what happened was, Lakshmi, you can sit over there if you want to. She's translating? Or you have to? Oh, your wife is. She's. Oh, the wife hears, the husband also hears. Is that how it works?
She will explain it.
She will explain it later, huh?
Okay.
Very good. Shruti Dara. So, Gadadha was thinking, this is a devotee, a great devotee of the Lord. So Mukunda understood the mind of Gadadha, and then he recited one verse from the 10th canto, where Krishna is described as being so merciful, because although Putana came to kill him, still he gave her liberation. And when Pundarik heard this verse, he just went into ecstasy. And his ecstasy was so intense that he just went mad. And he's just ripping his clothes and throwing everything around the room. And his servants were coming to hold him down. And there was like six servants, and they were grabbing him. And all the servants were going flying everywhere. And he was just throwing everything, just going mad. This went on for like 10 hours. And Gadadha was watching. And he realized, I think I committed an offense, thinking that this person was a materialist. So one cannot judge by externals who is a devotee and who is not. One has to judge by their activities. Well, it's hard to judge, really. Really, one who awakens Krishna consciousness in you, who inspires you in Krishna consciousness, then you should seek out such persons. Other persons may be in dress of devotees, but they just bring you down. So you avoid such association. Okay, so that is two types of sense enjoyments. Number four is the opposite sex. Association with the opposite sex is very inauspicious for the advancing devotee. In marriage, association is allowed according to proper moral and religious codes. Outside of that, it is called Stri Sangha or Purusha Sangha, and it is considered to be inauspicious. An example of the breach of association is Ramanujacharya when his wife offended his guru's wife, he sent her away to his parents' home, and then he took a sannyas. That's the story of the life of Ramanujacharya. When his wife offended his guru's wife, he sent her to his parents' home and then took sannyas. When one converses with the opposite sex with evil intentions, it is called worldly association. So, even in marriage, one should be very careful to keep the principles ring, and that is that one should serve each other in the mood of devotional service and not try to enjoy sense gratification. There is some allowance for sense gratification and sense satisfaction in married life, but that is simply to stabilize one's emotional and physical needs in order for one to progress on the path of devotional service, because every ashram is a place of spiritual cultivation. Grihastha ashram is not a license for sense enjoyment. It just allows for family life to develop, which requires a little bit of more association with the opposite sex and with worldly activities. The same, the principles remain the same. One has to become Krishna conscious. So one has to be careful. Generally for renunciates, there's no question of association with the opposite sex, brahmacharis and sannyasis, and of course ladies who are single, also brahmacharinis. If there is association, that association should be only for devotional service and should not be in an extended period of time. Once you deal with the matter and then go on. Sometimes in the excuse of go pushing on one's Krishna conscious service, you see sometimes the renounced order takes undue association of the opposite sex, and what happens is they become affected by that. And a lot of times a person's spiritual life will become weakened, and then they also, the mind becomes disturbed, and one cannot think of Krishna. And then one cannot perform one's devotional service. So one has to be careful with that. One has to give up the spirit of enjoyment, because in association with the opposite sex, if one has that spirit of enjoyment, that will immediately be awakened. So one has to develop the mood of service. The mood of service is the foundation for that association. Women should see men as mother. Women should see men as mother. It's been a while. Men should see women as mother other than their own wife. Women should see men as son. When one lady asked Prabhupada, well, if men see women as mother, what should women see men as? And Sri Prabhupada said, as son. So women should have a motherly attitude towards the brahmacharis, towards the sannyasis. And the grounds order should have a mood of mother. And that way, the devotional principles will stay at the foundation of that relationship and not sense gratification. Of course, in one's family life, one doesn't see their wife as mother. That's a little different. But therefore, one has to keep careful the principles of Grihastha life. Generally, one has to see that I am servant of my wife, I am servant of my husband. If I try to exploit them or try to enjoy, and then the principle of the ashram becomes affected. There was one story where Mrs. Radhanath Maharaj told this story a few times. He told me this story, this is interesting. One husband and wife were having a fight, they were fighting and fighting and fighting, so they came to him for some counseling. He was telling them, well, you should see each other as servant. You serve your husband, you serve your wife, you're a servant of your wife, you're a servant of your husband. So they went home, they start fighting again. He said, didn't you hear Maharaj? He says, you're my servant. And the other one was saying, no, he said, you're my servant. So nothing was accomplished. So they had it right, but they had it backwards at the same time. So in household life, the men shouldn't think themselves the enjoyer, and the woman, he thinks the woman is his facility to facilitate his enjoyment. If he thinks like that, he's fallen. The woman is supposed to assist her husband in Krishna consciousness, and the man is supposed to also give the woman what she needs in order to make progress in devotional service, and also to provide material things. So, therefore, we have to carefully study these the principles of the ashrams. Otherwise, if we don't, then the ashram becomes a place of, it's not an ashram anymore. Okay, so the opposite sex, one has to be very careful. After brahmacharis, there's 8 ways to break brahmachari. That's mentioned in the 6th canto. Thinking about it, planning for it, making arrangements, meeting, talking, and then ultimately the act itself. So there are 8 ways to break brahmacharya. You should read that. It's in the 6th canto, chapter 1, verses 13 and 14. First chapter of the 6th canto, the principles of proper brahmacharya. Is there any brahmacharya here? He he's falling very nicely. He's absorbed. He's not associating with anyone. Absorbed in service. Hare Krishna. Okay, so, and then there is the next category. There's the opposite sex, and then there is called womanizers, the infatuation and bondage which occur to a man from attachment to any other object is not as complete as the result from attachment to a woman or to the fellowship of men who are fond of women. Remember 2 rules, one for householders and one for sannyasis. Okay. Next category is dharmadvajas, the hypocritically devout. Now, this is the most dangerous of all the associations. One should give up their association with special care. They accept the external signs, but are not actually followers. And that means they appear to be devotees, Prabhupada calls Kali Chala. They're disciples of Kali. They have Tilak and Kanti Mala. And they look like devotees, but in their hearts, they have no devotion. They're simply trying to use spiritual movements to put forth their own programs of control. So that may not be easy to find out, but you can detect them by their activities. There are 2 types. There is no worse association in the world, Bhakti Vinod Thakur. Better to associate with sense enjoyers than to associate with hypocrites. Some of the persons become guru and others disciples. They accumulate wealth, collect women followers, always think of sense enjoyment within their heart. Some people are not sense enjoyments, but take pleasure in associating with sense enjoyments. False prestige and material assets. And there's some verses in this connection. Srimad Bhagavatam 1-38. Let's see if I can find that verse. The hypocritically devout. Three 38, 2, 7, 42 indicates only those who render unreserved devotional service or unalloyed can be known, can know the Lord and be free from Maya. First, we have the example of Ramadas Vishvasu. Do you remember that story, Ramadas Vishvasu? How many remember that story? Ramadas Vishvasu? Okay, so the story is Raghunath Bhatta Goswami. He was in Benares, and he went to the gold travel to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Vrindavan. So he left Benares and he started to travel. On his way, he stopped in one place just nearby, and he met this devotee called Ramadas Vishvasu. Now, Ramadas Vishvasu was very, very inclined to Raghunath Bhakta Goswami. He saw this as a very great devotee. The Lord let me serve him. So he became attached to Raghunath Bhakta Goswami, and he traveled with him and served him really nicely. And this Ramadas Vishvasu, he was always chanting the name Ram. He would chant Ram's name. So he appeared to be a very wonderful devotee, serving Raghunath Bhakta, chanting Ram's name. When they were both arrived in Vrindavan, they met Lord Chaitanya together. And Lord Chaitanya was so happy to see Raghunath Bhatta, paid his obeisances to the Lord, and the Lord embraced him and didn't even look at Ramadas Vishvasa, didn't even glance in his direction. Ramadas Vishvasa was shocked. He was wondering, the Lord's not even looking at me. Finally, the Lord understood his mind. He turned to him and he said, give up this idea of becoming Ram and serve Ram. So he was chanting Ram's mantras because he wanted to become Ram. He wanted to become God. That was his intention. He chanted the holy names of Ram so he could become Ram. So the Lord could detect that and therefore said, you're simply a hypocrite. So he rejected him. So there are devotees or persons who perform devotional service in order to further their material life or to become to get a good position, and so they can, or else they want to become God, or they want to become incarnations of God. Prabhupada said the last merit in devotional life is to think you are God. So some people actually worship the Lord to become like the Lord. We worship the Lord to please the Lord. So these are the hypocritically devout, called Kalichala. You can look up the word in the folio, C-H-E-L-A. Baba talks about such persons. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says better to associate with sense enjoyers than to associate with the Kalichala. Narottam Das Thakur, in his great humility, has stated, my six enemies, lust, and of course, greed, anger, illusion, pride, and envy are dragging me, and I wander from house to house, hoping to gain wealth and sense gratification. And some people take up the renounced order of life simply to further their material life. It's good forms of sense gratification. Especially in India, where they honor the renunciates, so people take up that renunciation as an occupation. They put on saffron so they can get free food, and people will worship them like that. They give some ashibads, they change some ashes, they make some ashes appear, they may have some mystic power like that. And the last one is the ill behaved, foolish outcast. Unregulated, attached to sinful activities, such persons, if they attain faith, by good fortune can change. Bhakti Rasamaja says, Sutra says, quotes a verse by Maharshi Katyayana, it is better to accept the miseries of being encaged within bars and surrounded by burning flames and to associate with those bereft of Krishna consciousness. Such association is very great hardship. While practicing devotional service, one should carefully understand the subject and act accordingly. So one should not be sentimental since for the sake of some social arrangements and accept association of sense gratification fires. It will pollute your consciousness and impede your enthusiasm in Krishna consciousness. One has to be really careful. Therefore, the ultimate principle is one should seek out the association with them. Jai Shri Shri Gauri Sai Ki Jai. So, that's two. There's one more to go. It's called Lalyu. Let's take some questions on this one. Any questions about Janasankha? You can preach to them, but that means giving your association. But as soon as you take equal footing, and then you accept their association, and then you start, becoming, extracting sense gratification. Because they have a sentiment, at best, they have a sentimental attachment to sense gratification, even if they're not gross sense gratification. They're still worthy people. All sense gratification leads away from Krishna. One has to see sense gratification as poison. If you don't see it as poison, it'll affect you. So how do you avoid that? You have friendship with devotees, and for others you have official friends. Official means you carry on business, but you start developing affectionate relationships. It's gonna pollute your consciousness, guaranteed. You may not even see it as it's happening, but it's happening. And then you lose your attraction to Krishna consciousness.
So what do you mean, that we have to be formal with them?
Yes, exactly, formal. Association is a very big part of our which way we go. As you associate, that's which direction you're going to go in. So in that association, you have to be careful. Yes, Baba.
I just need one point. The people category.
Womanizers? One who are attached to women. One who are attached to people who are attached to women. There's woman and womanizers. Again, we have to remember the definition. Woman means opposite sex. It doesn't necessarily mean female model. The infatuation of bondage, which occurs to, just mentioned that. So there's woman and womanizers. If you want a deeper explanation, you read that book called Bhakti Loka, it's by Bhakti Vinod Thakur, explains what these categories. Any other questions? Guys, no questions. This is a really amazing, this is a really detailed category. I guess you're all pure devotees. Okay. We'll go on to the next one. Next one is Valium. Yes, another question?
Last question. I recently heard the conversation of Srila Prabhupada with Krishna Goswami, He said that his father used to receive many sadhus, And he used to offer them marijuana,
discuss further this matter, Dhammakrishna, I actually remember the tape I was listening to a few weeks ago. And he said, my father used to host these different sadhus. And they would provide whatever the sadhus like. So they would smoke hashish. It was understood that a person who was a sadhu, he would smoke hashish, so that was the culture. So it was normal for them to do that, and people would accept that. That's what they do. They're not bhakti yogis, but they're considered sadhus. So he said, my father used to accommodate them by providing that. So the Lord Krishna Goswami was shocked and said, didn't he know? Because that's what they like, so that he was the host, so he just provided that. But Prabhupada, and later he explained that he wasn't so impressed by such persons. Because he really didn't see any pure devotees. So they're different kinds of sadhus. Anyway, you go to India, you'll understand. Yes, Mother.
She's asking about two things. One, if parents can cook for a devotee, for their devotee's son, even if they are not devotees, but they are favorable to the devotees. And the second thing is that if the devotee has to give love and affection to his parents or not, if they are not devotees.
So they have to be rejected from them.
The first one is, can someone who is favorable to a devotee children cook for those children? Well, favorable means they're not following the process, but they're not chanting and they're not following the regular principles.
Yeah.
No, it's a very nice sentiment, but sentimental leads you to hell. We're not sentimental. You got to be careful about this sentimentalism. The sentimentalism, if it's misplaced, it can you know, to be even the best people who have the best sentiment, if it's not connected with devotional principles, you know, you just go to hell. No, these people are committing sinful activity, and if they're preparing food, that comes out in the food, and the kids are getting that kind of, you know, prasadam. Why not give our children the best? Why not give them prasadam from the temple, or cook for them ourselves? Why let someone else do it? So you might be thinking, well, is she hearing my translation? Oh, you understand English?
Yes.
Yeah, oh, I'm sorry. Okay. You might be thinking, well, it's nice that these people are doing some seva for the kids, but let them do something else. Thing with prasadam, just like we have in our temples, nobody can cook unless they're Brahmins, to speak of, you know, just being a devotee. You can't even cook if you're. And even if you're coming to the temple, if you're not initiated, you're not allowed in the kitchen. Very, very high person. And the second question again was?
Should we have affection for our parents? Or just before them?
Should the children have affection for their parents, even if their parents are non-devotees? Yes, it's okay. Yeah, they should. Why not? If children don't have affection for their parents, we're not trying to destroy the family. But hopefully, if the kids are devotees, they'll, like, associate with their parents will also pick up something. But once they get older and they get more, you know, able to take care of themselves, and then they should seek out more association with devotees. But if they're children, they should stay with their parents even if their parents are not devotees. Yes? Is that a good answer?
That's a good question.
Did you understand my answers? Okay. Yes, okay. So they say, let's go to the movies. Okay, here's a can't get into this cheap sentiment. Yeah. It's the royal road to hell. We have to be careful about association. And there's so many wonderful devotees associated. So if we have to associate with finished persons or non-devotees, then we should do it officially because we have some business, or we should give them association. Prabhupada talks about that. Association means giving them association, not taking their association. If you can do that, then you can. Then that's a great service to them and to the Lord also. Make them a devotee and bring them up. Yeah, I know. I understand.
As you say that you left your job many years ago, can you explain something about it?
Yeah, I retired and took up Krishna consciousness. what that means is that there's, you know, we stop material activities. It means there's nothing coming in and nothing going out. Retired. So that was in relationship to the first one. So one takes up the principles of bhakti and now retires from their material activities. Now if you have a job because you're a family member, if your job is solely for the purpose of supporting your family so they can engage in devotional service, then that the job is also considered to be, in the one sense, you know, it could be a devotional service. But if it's not necessary, you just do it because you like it, then it's material. The best occupation is to serve Krishna. It's our eternal occupation. But in Grihastha life, there is the consideration of needing material things. Occupation is accepted provided it is within the boundaries of the principles. We're trying to get out of this material world. We want to go back to the spiritual world. You can't keep one foot in the material world and one foot in the spiritual world and expect to make it to the spiritual world. If you have one foot in each, you're in the material world. Everything gravitates to the lowest denominator. It's like in our temples, if we have weak devotees, it's the duty for the senior devotees to bring them up. Also, the weak devotees bring everyone down. So then we can go down to the lowest denominator. So, in the same way, if you have one foot in each world, you remain in the material world.
You are saying that as soon as you leave your job in the place, so many years together.
Yeah. Well, there's friendship, there's material friendship.
I mean, as soon as you live in that town, you start to have confidence in the devotees. What do you have to do?
When you look at the
start your life,
look at the devotees.
Decide to live. And not to be with them from there.
And you serve the devotees. Every situation in Krishna consciousness is based on service. So as a Grihastha, you can serve the Vaishnavas by whatever Krishna has given you. You have to see what best way you can serve.
I saw in 12 years that many devotees, then they went outside and started work.
Yeah. Prabhupada didn't want that. He wanted us to develop occupations that devotees work with devotees. This is his program. It's called the next stage of Krishna consciousness, Vanashram, setting up farm communities and living close to the land, developing self-sufficiency, creating occupations based on, you know, simple living, high thinking, not working in factories or working for non-devotees. So Prabhupada's vision is to create a culture of Krishna consciousness, and not that everything's in the temple and everybody outside's in Maya. It's the extended temple. Ultimately, Prabhupada wanted these communities to develop as communities where Grihasthas live and work with devotees and live with devotees, completely cut off from the material association. We're not doing that yet, unfortunately, but that's a problem.
The business mentality when you become devotee.
Yeah. What is this business? Well, behind that is Krishna's business. If Krishna is devotee, the devotee means Krishna's business.
I was talking with Srinathaji.
Yeah.
And this argument was very deep.
Hmm.
All my life, I tried to do money.
You were saying, or he was saying?
No, he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
No, I wasn't like that. Mm-hmm. I didn't pay much attention. So he said, still now, but I'm using this for this person.
Yeah. Yeah, but eventually he'll have to give that up at one point too. Right now he's doing a nice service.
So talking about what you said this morning about that we have to dress well and go to pray right to people and cash.
Oh, for fundraising? Well, that was just a fundraising statement, that's all. Yeah. Well, that's another subject. Okay, any more questions? Should we do the last one tonight, or should we go for it tomorrow night on that one? And then there's the six things that are favorable for devotional service. Guru John's looking at his watch, so I think we should stop him. Yeah, this last one is...
Maybe you want to start. Maybe it's 6 o'clock tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm going to be able to finish. You have to tell me what's best. I'm flexible. 6 o'clock tomorrow?
No, we have only this left because the last one has tomorrow.
Yeah, Wednesday night is the last, not even Thursday.
Thursday morning.
Right.
No time to prepare.
Well, then, you know, the six things that are favorable for devotional service.
Yeah.
I mean, they were also has a lot of material. This is a long seminar. It's at least 8 hours.
Where was when you will be back?
August.
You can just finish properly this part.
This section? You can do this?
There will be more questions and answers.
Yeah. Tomorrow I can do volume, and then we can just go back over and review.
Yeah,
it's nice to review. Yeah, actually, it's a good point to try to concentrate instead of just, you know, fill up time with as much information as possible.
And then we it from food to the other for the next time.
Yeah, I think that's good. All right, so tomorrow will be the last one, and then we'll review the five again, and we'll go back over it. It's nice if you can learn these. These are essential, because Rupa Goswami has explained six things that one should avoid, six things that one should accept. So these are essential. And I think, you know, we always emphasize in our classes things that should be accepted. So that's why I always do the things that should be avoided first, because we don't know the subtleties of these things. Okay. Any final questions? Okay. Oh, yes. Yeah,
yeah, about the formality, because there have been questions to different kind of approach, for example, with the parents and also at work, to be formal. Sometimes I've seen in the past, at least, that the problem was to have a mature approach, you know, but just so that people couldn't, you know, see that we were kind of fanatical, and you know, to be formal but intelligently.
Yeah,
that's what I mean.
Devotees respect. We respect everybody because in the heart of all of the entities, Krishna is there. Should give respects to everyone according to their position. We don't disrespect anyone. If you disrespect even, you know, even the most insignificant person, you know, that's a blemish on your relationship with Krishna. Because everybody has to be fear of Krishna. Even the beggar on the streets. But there is an etiquette for interaction. And that we have to learn that etiquette. But at the same time, respect is the focus. We respect everyone. Don't disrespect anybody. We're not rude or harsh or, you know, ill-behaved with anyone. Yeah, we give everyone respect, but we have to be careful not to be pulled into materialistic topics. Because we're trying to show respect. If we start getting into that, then all of a sudden we find ourselves, you know, hearing things and discussing things that are, you know, actually sometimes cause us great anxiety. The heart becomes disturbed, the mind becomes unhappy. And, you know, karmis, they don't understand, so they'll talk to you about, you know, their parties and their love life and their adventures, and they think that they're sharing something with you. But that's the way they think, so therefore, you have to be careful not to get pulled into them. So you let people know you're a devotee in a very proper way, so they also can be understandable. That, well, maybe this person, he doesn't want to hear about these things. He's, you know, he's a religious person, so he's not interested. If you can go to work with Tilak, that's nice. And then they say, what's that? And we tell them, then he can preach. There was an article back to Godhead. One lady, she's living in America. You saw that a couple years ago? She's wearing Tilak to work. And she talks to everybody, preaches to them. Yes.
Yeah, the point is to be, if we show, you know, ourselves as a Vaishnava, the problem might be to, you know, support our culture with our years, you know, because many people start to actually start the art and scrutinize our years. I mean, it's a great responsibility to be coherent and that's the challenge at least.
Yeah, we should be clear about what our position is. Okay? Yeah. We're not ashamed to become devotees. We're actually not, we're proud, but we're proud in the right way. We're proud that we received the mercy of Krishna. The devotee is also proud that he is, that Krishna is his master, he is Krishna's servant. That is real pride. So we're fortunate. And we're not ashamed of being a devotee. Why should we be ashamed of that? There's one story. And there was this one factory in India. So the employer was a Muslim. And all the employees were Hindus. So this Muslim said, "Tomorrow, from now on, none of you come to work with this tilak. If you do, you're fired." So all the workers the next day, they all took off their tilak except one. So they all came, and then this one person, he wore his tilak anyway. And he said, the boss said to him, "Well, I told you not to come." He said, "This is my religion and I'm proud of it." So he said, "Okay, all you other ones, you can't wear it, but he can wear it." Because he had conviction. And his conviction was, you know, the man also had some understanding of, you know, a sense of what his conviction is. So he respected that. Although he disagreed with it, he respected it. So if you actually believe in what you're doing, you know, you will not be embarrassed. So the devotees are humble. If we walk around with dhotis or tilak, we also have to be very humble and respectful to others. If we're not, then we're hypocrites. Then they condemn us. Because they expect something better than the ordinary person. Well, here's a religious person, and they're acting improperly, then they respect us. Although they may not agree with us, still we should respect it. I mean, I always travel in dhotis. Some people, you know, they'll say Hare Krishna, or ask questions, and other people won't even look at you. But still, you know, they're not ashamed. Actually, you know, we're dressed as the spiritual people of the spiritual world. They say, "Why are you dressed like that?" Because people in the spiritual world dress like that. You dress like that because people in the material world dress like that. So we're spiritual people and you're material people. That's the problem. So they dress different. Okay. 9:00. Thank you. All right, so we'll stop here. Thank you for tolerating class. And no problem, Prabhupada.
Yeah.
Tomorrow,
yeah, 6:30, 6:00. Keep it safe.